What comes to mind when you hear the name Mary Magdalene? Not going to make you say it out loud. But if you're like most people, the word that comes to mind is prostitute, or a similar title. Because that's the way she has been characterized for centuries. And yet, there is absolutely no basis for it. None. Well, thank you. Just getting started. There never was. And even the Catholic Church now agrees. So it shocks many people to hear that nowhere in the Bible is it said that Mary Magdalene was a prostitute, nor even was it said that she was a public sinner. So this excerpt is from an article called Who Framed Mary Magdalene? That appeared on uscatholic.org. It's important for you to know the source. And here's what it says. Many cradle Catholics are shocked to learn that there is no biblical evidence that Mary of Magdala was a prostitute or public sinner. She's mentioned 12 times in the New Testament, making her the second most mentioned woman after the Virgin Mary. Most references are found in the crucifixion and empty tomb narratives, where she is portrayed as a loyal disciple at the foot of the cross and as the first witness to the resurrection. And by the way, that is said in all four of the canonical gospels, that Mary Magdalene was the first one to see Jesus after the resurrection. She is now believed to have been one of several well-off, independent women who followed Jesus and financially supported his ministry. These female followers of Jesus became central when everything started to fall apart. While others fled, the women were faithful, and they were led by Mary of Magdala. Could it be a more different picture? Where on earth did we get the idea that she was a fallen woman? Well, church authorities and Bible scholars tell us now that it was all a case of mistaken identity. And that the mistake occurred when the woman who is identified in the 7th chapter of Luke, she's identified as a sinful woman or a sinner, and you know this story, she's the woman who bathes Jesus' feet with her tears and then dries them with her hair, kisses his feet, and anoints them with ointment. Well, the mistake occurred when that woman was identified as Mary Magdalene. Now, let's bear in mind that nowhere in that passage does it say the woman was a prostitute, and Mary Magdalene is not mentioned at all. Nevertheless, people make stuff up, and that's apparently what happened here. So there are two schools of thought about it. The first is that this was an honest mistake, that many different women in the Bible were sort of conflated into one person. And so it was assumed that this was the same as the Mary Magdalene, who was mentioned several passages later about having 7 demons cast from her. We'll come back to that a little bit later. That's one school of thought, that it was just an innocent mistake. The other school of thought is that casting Mary Magdalene as a prostitute was a very convenient way for the male-dominated church to minimize her role and her authority and her prominence as an early church leader, and further was a way to just sort of suppress women in general from church leadership. So it really all came together and was spoken out loud in 1591 when Pope Gregory the Great issued a proclamation in Homily 33 that said this sinful woman in Luke 7 and Mary Magdalene were the same person. So he sort of made it official there. Well, in 1969, the church retracted that. They repealed that statement and essentially said, oh, that really wasn't true. Have you heard anything about that? Has anybody heard about the church saying, oh, no, Mary Magdalene wasn't a prostitute? Now, it's funny how those things just kind of didn't get out. It reminds me of when there's a correction in the newspaper, and it appears like way back in the paper. And meanwhile, the original story that did all the harm just continues on and on. And so in most mainstream denominations, they still speak about Mary Magdalene in this way. Nevertheless, things are changing, and word is getting out. There's more research, there's more activity afoot, and it's all aimed at restoring Mary Magdalene to what is considered her rightful place as Jesus' beloved disciple and one of the most prominent leaders in the early church. So there have been a number of different findings along these lines, and certainly, you know, the Da Vinci Code had everybody speculating. But one of the biggest developments that really gave it some substance came in 1945 with the discovery of the Gnostic Gospels in Nag Hammadi, Egypt. Anybody heard about that? So for those who are not familiar, the Gnostic Gospels are gospel accounts of Jesus that were not included in the Bible canon and not included in the New Testament. And they weren't included rather purposefully, because these Gnostics didn't really agree with those who became Orthodox Christians. So they didn't necessarily buy into the way that the church was evolving and what they were teaching. And so the Gnostics, by comparison, really focused on God within. They believed that there is a path of inner awakening that we are all following, that it is a path of deepening self-knowledge that leads us to a greater realization of the presence of God within us. And they recognized Mary Magdalene, the Gnostics did, as the greatest apostle, the apostle to the apostles, which means the teacher of the teachers. They believed she was a visionary that received special revelations from Jesus. And they honored her as a powerful leader in her own right. And they also were very clear in describing her as Jesus's beloved and even intimate companion, and the person to whom he bestowed the highest authority as he was preparing to leave. So that's how the Gnostics saw things. They look quite a bit different from what we're taught in the traditional church. And I have to think that Leonardo da Vinci must have in some way encountered Gnostic thinking or been influenced by it when he completed his classic painting of the Last Supper in 1498. So you've probably all seen this before. The Bible tells us that sitting to Jesus' right was the beloved disciple, the beloved companion. Well, let's take a little closer look at who is sitting next to Jesus there. It looks like a woman, doesn't it? So we would assume that that's Mary Magdalene, the one who's most often listed in the Bible and discussed. And yet, as clear as that seems, even today, there is raging debate about whether that really is Mary Magdalene, or, as shown in this depiction, that is actually John, the Gospel of John. John is often considered the beloved disciple. I thought this was really kind of hilarious. I found this on the internet. The reason I thought it was funny is not only does that arrow point to Mary Magdalene and say, you know, it's John, not Mary, but it misspelled Mary and put two R's in there as if to sort of sweep away two things at once. It's not a woman, and he wasn't married. It's amazing. It's amazing. Well, there's another depiction of the Last Supper that I've discovered that really speaks to my heart, and I believe it is a more accurate depiction. I guess I'm more in the school of the Gnostics in this, and I imagine Jesus' ministry as being filled with men and women, all being welcome there. And so see what you think of this image of the Last Supper. This, to me, has such a beautiful, sacred simplicity to it. He has a woman seated to his right, and there are other women seated around the sides, leaning in to listen. There's just such a glorious warmth to it and an inclusivity. Thank you. Well, there is, in fact, you can change it, thanks. There is, in fact, a Gospel of Mary. In fact, there are two Gospels of Mary, meaning the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. So I'm going to tell you about both of them. And the first one was discovered in, it was actually published in about 1955. And so when you hear typically out in the world about the Gospel of Mary, this is the one you're going to hear about. So it was pieced together from Greek fragments of manuscripts in the 3rd century and Coptic Egyptian manuscripts from the 5th century. So they found these things and kind of put them together into a gospel. Well, the problem with that is there are a lot of pages missing. In fact, 10 out of the 19 pages indicated are missing, so more than half of it is not there. Well, nevertheless, you can discern certain threads even when you read that pared-down, kind of cobbled-together gospel. And one of them is that Mary was considered a wise, Mary Magdalene, a wise and revered teacher. And the second is that there was just a little bit of tension between her and the male disciples, because here was Mary getting all of the attention, and they knew that Jesus loved her the most. So that's what you tend to hear out there in Bible scholarship, but yet there is another Gospel of Mary Magdalene that has come to light more recently. It's called the Gospel of the Beloved Companion, and the subtitle is The Complete Gospel of Mary Magdalene. And this book was published in 2010 after being very closely held for a very long time, and it is said to be a first century account of Jesus' ministry and teachings written by Mary Magdalene herself. And the translator said that Mary Magdalene wrote this after Jesus died, and she brought it over to southern France with her. And there it became the centerpiece of a growing spiritual group that honored her and the teachings contained in it. You know, I don't know if that document is authentic or not, but what I do know is that gospel is absolutely stunning. It tells some of the same stories that you read in the Gospel of John, the Gospel of Thomas, and even the fragmented Gospel of Mary. But they're told with a freshness and an authenticity, and I would even say a credibility, that not only makes it make sense to you, but it creates a feeling. It creates a feeling of being in the presence of Jesus as you're reading it. But probably what is most striking in this gospel are the unique passages. It is the only gospel that says outright that Jesus was married and that Mary Magdalene was his wife. And that indeed the wedding of Cana, where Jesus turned the water into wine, was his own wedding. It's one of those things you're reading along and you think, oh, this sounds familiar, the woman at the well and different accounts. And then every once in a while you'll just hit something and it's like, wow. So there are radical aspects to it, but you know, each of us in our own heart gets to decide what we believe and what we don't. But the other, I think, really compelling piece that's unique to this is that Jesus gives Mary, what we call Mary Magdalene, he gives her the title Magdala. We always think that she was from Magdala, but he shares it in a very different way, because the word Magdala in Hebrew means tower. And this is one of the passages where he's speaking to his disciples. I tell you this, when all have abandoned me, only she shall stand beside me like a tower built on a high hill and fortified, cannot fail, nor can it be hidden. From this day forth, she shall be known as Magdala, for she shall be as a tower to my flock. And the time will come when her tower shall stand alone by mine. When I was working on this talk, you know, I've led a couple of classes on the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, and I was in prayer about this one, and I continued to receive, I guess I would say, a message from the ethers. And the message was, tell my story. So, I think one of the very best ways to do that is by sharing some of the words in the Gospel of the Beloved Companion. It's one of the most exquisite passages in there. in which Mary Magdalene is describing to the disciples a vision that she has been shown by Jesus. And it describes moving up the tree of higher consciousness and the various things we learn along the way. And I believe it speaks very clearly and very directly to what we teach in Unity about climbing in consciousness. And so to portray this, I've invited a group of readers who have become enamored with this gospel along with me, and I'd like to invite you to come on up. This passage begins. Then he showed me a vision in which I saw a great tree that seemed to reach unto the heavens. And as I saw these things, Yeshua said, "The roots of this tree are in the earth, which is your body. The trunk extends upward to the crown, which is the kingdom of the Spirit. There are 8 great boughs upon this tree, and each bough bears its own fruit, which you must eat in all its fullness. The leaves at the bottom of the tree are thick and plentiful, so no light penetrates to illuminate the way. But fear not, for I am the way and the light. And I tell you that as one ascends the tree, the leaves that block one from the light are fewer, so it is possible to see all more clearly."
And as he said these things, I felt my soul ascend and saw the first great bough that bears the fruit of love and compassion, the foundation of all things. And I knew that before you can eat of this fruit and gain its nourishment, you must be free of all judgment and wrath. When you have freed yourself of these burdens, you may eat of the fruit and so gain the love and compassion that will allow you to pass the first of 7 guardians. And I heard the voice of the Lord of wrath calling to me, but I denied him, and he had no part in me.
So I saw my soul ascend again, and he showed me a second great bough, weighed down with the fruit of wisdom and understanding. And I saw that before you can taste of its bounty, you must be free of all ignorance and intolerance. Only then can you eat of the fruit and so pass upward unhindered through the second of the 7 gates. And I heard the voice of ignorance call to me, but I knew him not, and so my soul did thus unchallenged.
Then my master showed me the third great bough, which bears the fruit of honor and humility. Only when free of all duplicity and arrogance may you partake of its nourishment. And arrogance called me and said, "You are not worthy, go back." But my soul was deaf to him, and so moved onward and upward into increasing light.
And then came the fourth bough, blossoming with the fruit of strength and courage. And I heard him tell me, "To eat this fruit, you must have freed yourself from weakness and confront and conquer the illusion of your fears." And the master of the world stood before me and claimed me as his own. But I denied him, and he had no part of me.
Only then, my master told me, when you have rejected the deceiver, can you pass through the hardest gate of all to attain the fifth bough and the fruit of clarity and truth. Only then will you know the clarity and truth of your soul and know yourself for the first time, understanding that you are a child of the living spirit. And as my soul moved upward, I realized that I could no longer hear the voice of the world, as all had become as silence.
Then in the light above, I saw the sixth bough, the one that bore the fruit of power and healing. My master told me that when you truly have eaten of the fruit of the clarity and truth of yourself, then could you partake of the fruit and of power and healing, the power to heal your own soul, and thereby make it ready to ascend to the seventh bough, where it will be filled by the fruits of light and goodness.
And I saw my soul, now free of all darkness, ascend again to be filled with the light and goodness that is the Spirit. And I was filled with a fierce joy as my soul turned to fire and flew upwards in the flames, from whence my master showed me the eighth and final bough, upon which burned the fruit of the grace and beauty of the Spirit.
And I felt my soul and all that I could see dissolve and vanish in a brilliant light, in a likeness unto the sun. And in the light, I beheld a woman of extraordinary beauty, clothed in garments of brilliant white. The figure extended its arms, and I felt my soul drawn into its embrace. And in that moment, I was freed from the world, and I realized that the fetter of forgetfulness was temporary. From now on, I shall rest through the course of the time of the age in silence. And then, as if from a great distance, I heard the voice of my master tell me, Miriam, who I have called the Magdala, now you have seen the all, and I have known the truth of yourself, the truth that is, I am. Now that you have become the completion of completions, and thus ends the vision.
She concludes by saying, this is what my master has told and shown me, and only from the truth I tell you that all that I have revealed to you is true. When the Magdala had told of all that Yeshua had said and done, she fell silent, since it was in that silence that Yeshua had spoken with her and revealed these truths. Thank you to our readers. And let's prepare now for our meditation. I invite you to get comfortable in your seat. Close your eyes if you wish, and let's take a deep breath in. And then release and let go. In this shining, perfect moment, I invite you to open your heart to the presence of Mary, the Magdala, speaking to you this morning through these words and these teachings. To open your heart to the presence of Yeshua, Jesus, with her, shining as himself and through her, and touching your very soul. I invite you to imagine within you these eight great boughs, the tree of life. You appreciate God's grace upon you as you ascend in your understanding and your consciousness. And know that all of love and all of God and all of oneness is in you and with you, guiding your way. I invite you to immerse yourself in this place of great love and unity, and to open yourself to what is yours to hear in the silence. hearts rejoice in this wondrous journey of ever greater understanding and insights. We give thanks on this day for the sense of a story feeling fuller, more complete and whole, one that has never seemed quite right to us. We honor the truth shining through the ages and know that it always does. Even when it's been obscured for a while, it shines through. For this knowing, we are so grateful. Thank you, God. Thank you, Jesus. And thank you, Mary the Magdala.